south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Just a little off-topic comment here. You have to realize I get lots and lots of emails and messages, but I don't get some of these scammers and Nigerian princes who start out their emails and messages with my dear or dear or dear friend. My dear? Come on, I'm nobody's dear. My mom doesn't even say my dear. You have to know when the first two words, the introduction, starts like that, they're setting you up for a scam. And that's why, you know, here in Latin America too, it completely turns me off when I'm walking down the street or I'm in an elevator or I'm walking through a lobby somewhere and some Latino tries to get my attention by saying, "Hey, amigo." Of course, meaning friend, but I'm not his friend. And so I'm very leery, and you should be too when someone walks by and says, "Amigo," you got to know he wants something from you. Oh, and by the way, though I've heard that come on 1,000 times here in Latin America, I've never once heard it from a Latina, a female. Somehow, the ladies down here are born with 3 times the culture and manners than the men. Though, don't get me wrong, the Latinos in general, male and female, are much more friendly and sociable than the usual suspects up in the States. Oh, and another thing, Latinos and Latinas do not like personal confrontation. Not that us gringos and expats like it all that much either. The thing is, if you've got the balls, the brains, and the determination to come down here and have a plan B, you're very much more likely to be pretty assertive. You will hold your ground. And in life, there are lots of things to get pissed off about. But it's common down here to see Latinos go overboard in the politeness department, where there's some kind of situation where feathers are being ruffled. For example, I've been in many meetings when there's been a lawyer or two present, and no matter how rough or accusatory the conversation gets, seems Latinos will always remain nice and polite the whole time. Whereas I've seen gringos and expats explode in a rage when things get testy. Hey, I've done that, especially the first couple of years I was down here and my Spanish really sucked. Therefore, obviously, there were lots of communication breakdowns. Still, Latinos keep their cool. In fact, one of the most often heard terms here in Latin America is tranquilo, which is a derivative of the word tranquil. You'll hear it all the time. It means calm down, take it easy, relax. However, note that the longer you're down here in Latin America, less likely you are to blow up or get ticked off at things that might have really bothered and set you off before. Because, you know, yelling, screaming, blowing your stack, and getting all worked up. That, you'll find, does not advance the argument or provide a solution any quicker than keeping calm. In other words, tranquilo, gringo, is good advice. Though it is a bit amazing to see how Latinos just sit and take it as gringos, oftentimes in the same room, just explode with rage. Oh, and in the beginning, when gringos first get down and what usually sets them off right off the bat is the realization that Latinos are never on time. And when they are, it's usually a mistake. Though, if you're doing business with a first world transplanted company or franchise, they've usually conquered the mañana time thing. That's part of the reason a franchise is successful. Enough said about that. Okay, from the Now I've Seen Everything department, I was just on Amazon and I noticed they're selling vegan dental floss. Vegan dental floss. Yeah, there's really a market for that, right? Though, I guess in a way, it could be a good idea. I mean, look. Regular dental floss and practically everything these days is made out of petroleum products and plastic. And vegan dental floss is made out of, ta-da, caravan and a drum solo, please. Are you ready for this? Hemp, H-E-M-P. Though I understand now that practically everything that can be made out of petroleum products and plastic can be made from hemp. But you knew that already, right? Hey, believe it or not, my grandpa, who had a farm outside of Chicago, grew that stuff for the Army in World War II because it makes the best rope for the Navy and Army Air Corps. Of course, when the war was over, they shit-canned the stuff and dropped the contracts because hemp back then, you know, and even up to just a few years ago was a dirty word. And now, hopefully, it's gonna replace petroleum and plastic. Well, at least we can dream, right? Oh, and remember a couple of shows ago I was talking about contamination of fish, tilapia, shrimp, and the worst of all, North European farmed salmon, of all things. As it turns out, once again, I was slightly ahead of my time because just yesterday I was reading an article published in the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology with the focus of the article stressing that every single seafood species they've ever tested, including wild blue crabs, oysters, prawns, squid, sardines, and every kind of fish you could think of, they have throughout their bodies microplastic remnants. That's what they're called, microplastic remnants. You see, according to the journal Medical News Today, and I can give you the link if you like, the headline says, studies found plastic in every single seafood sample it analyzed, saying that microplastics have invaded the entire food chain to an extent that was never previously documented. Then they talk about certain bits of plastic less than 5 millimeters in length, the size of a sesame seed or less. Those are the plastic pieces in fish and seafood that you can see. Much worse, they say, are the plastic bits you can't see with a naked eye. Then they say in this article, if you eat an average serving of oysters or squid, you're eating about 1 milligram of microplastic. And if you're eating sardines, up to 30 times that, 30 milligrams of plastic. With all samples, it said, containing an amount of polyvinyl chloride, with the largest concentrations of plastic being polyethylene, said Johnny as he sipped his organic coffee from a plastic straw in a styrofoam cup. Nah, just kidding. I may be dumb, but I'm not stupid. Then it says, with roughly 17 to 20% of all the protein humans consume being seafood, the findings suggest people who regularly eat seafood, over time their bodies are accumulating a lot of plastic, with much of it the small, microscopic bits, which only makes you wonder how many train cars full of fish do you have to consume before you can be an honorary member of the retired ASEAN family. For some people, you know, plastics are A-OK as long as they end up in the right places, right, Kim? But I digress as usual. Now, as far as the no-see-um microplastics, not being expelled from the body, that, along with previously found microplastics and nanoplastics, the very small stuff on the molecular level, now, get this, being found in all sea salt, beer, honey, and bottled water, too, and everything else they've tested. Not only that, it says, it's pervasive in the air we breathe. It's found to a degree in all dust particles, meaning there are microscopic bits of plastic settling on all the food and drink that are left out in the open for any period of time. Thank you, DuPont, Monsanto, Colgate, Palmolive, and a host of others. Yep, even toothpaste, baby formula, and mother's milk, and everyone's favorite, pizza, have plastic bits in them. So there you have it. More fun things to talk about next time you're at Starbucks, sucking down a double cafe mocha de java latte through the opening in the plastic top in that so-called organic paper cup that's also loaded at the microscopic level with plastic bits. Oh, and one more happy piece of news. A brand new extensive study reveals that all fast food packaging, all, contains high levels of a man-made chemical known as PFAS. It's a plastic used to make materials grease and water resistant, commonly found in products such as apparel, carpeting, upholstery, and food wrappers. That's why the grease from your Big Mac doesn't get absorbed into the wrapper. Not to mention, half of all food packaging samples tested positive for fluoride. What the hell's that doing in there? So then what's wrong with PFAS chemicals? That's, you know, a shortened term for a very long chemical substance. Well, you'll like this. PFAS is referred to as the forever chemical because it has a super long half-life, stays in the water supply and the human body for years. And according to a recent National Geographic report, after testing 44 different city water supplies in 31 states, they found that 43 of 44 exceeded the so-called safe limit for the previously mentioned forever chemical found in fast food wrappers. So did you get that? Only one out of 44 water supplies passed federal and state standards, whatever those are. The question always is, can you trust those standards? I doubt it. Oh, and by the way, we're talking about organic toxins now. That means they have a carbon chain on them. And the only way, or I should say the cheapest and most effective way to get that stuff out of your water supply, you need a carbon block filter, because, you know, carbon block filters absorb organic compounds, anything with a carbon chain on it. So the question is, are you filtering your water? Well, if you're not, you know, you can put together a 3-canister, very simple system for under $100. So how's it work? Well, the first stage, the first canister is a sediment filter, you know, to get the dirt and larger particles and rust and stain out of the water. And the second canister stage, a ceramic filter. That'll filter out bacteria and viruses, cysts, etc. And the final filter, a carbon block filter. I'm not talking about a granulated activated charcoal filter. Those are available too, and they're usually less expensive. The trick is to get a carbon block filter. That means, like it says, the carbon's in a solid block. So, if you want the complete information and details on how to set up one yourself, that is, what to use and where to buy the stuff, even a set of not-so-professional pictures of my own setup that I have under my kitchen sink under the counter, I've got those for you. And though the pictures themselves might look a little crude, you have to remember, I travel a lot. And when I'm renting an apartment for a couple of months, I'll take that system with me. I've set it up so it's got three quick disconnects on it, so I can disassemble it in less than 5 minutes. That allows me to move it and remount it under anyone's kitchen sink in less than 30 minutes. And the only reason why it would take that long is because it comes with its own dispenser spout, and you got to drill a hole for that somewhere in the sink. That is, if it's a stainless sink, and I hate those stainless sinks. Talk about oxymorons. There's nothing stainless about a stainless sink, nor a stainless stove or refrigerator, unless it's got some kind of transparent coating on it. It'll be some kind of transparent plastic, of course. Again with the plastic, huh? Well, at least people don't go around licking their stoves and refrigerators. Wait a minute. Hey, but you know, stupid is the new norm, right? Anyway, if you're cursed and have a stainless steel sink, you can drill a hole in that and mount the little gooseneck spout. And if you've got a porcelain sink, always the best choice, but you can't drill a hole in a porcelain sink, so you've got to drill a hole in the counter right next to the sink. Though, most porcelain and stainless steel sinks will have a knockout, a little hole you can punch out of it. You just look underneath the sink and you'll see it pre-etched. And with a porcelain sink, you just tap it with a small hammer and it pops out from the other direction. So there are cases when you don't need a drill, but most cases you do. So if you want my complete setup and pictures of where it's sitting under my sink right now, send me an email to expatfiles@gmail.com. Then how often do I change the filters? People ask me that all the time. Well, I'll tell you, when you first set it up, it comes out really fast from the spout. You can fill up a gallon jug in about a minute or less. By the way, I've got all stainless and glass containers at my house, so when I fill up a gallon jug, it's a glass jug. That's for in the house, and for in the car, a stainless steel bottle or jug. Now, after a while, some months, depending on your water quality coming in, you'll notice the flow getting a little weaker. And whether the flow is weak or strong, the water is still very pure. Though when it's noticeably weaker, and your mom, wife, or girlfriend complains about it, that'll light a fire under your ass in a hurry, huh? Even if you're a procrastinator. Now, that's when I'll change the very first filter, the sediment filter. The cost, generally, no more than $3. By the way, I usually use a 5 or a 10 micron filter for the first one. Then you should have great flow again. Like I said, check the first canister filter when the flow gets slow. 90% of the time, that's the only one you have to change. Now, if you change that one and the flow still remains slow, then you carefully pull out the ceramic filter from the second cartridge. And I'm sure you'll notice some scum is built up on the outside of it. It's usually a brownish, rust-colored scum. So you just take one of those plastic, not metal, pot scrubbers and scrub off the crap. Yep, I'm sure you've noticed. Again with the plastic, huh? Anyway, you clean it, rinse it, and put it back in, and normally you're as good as new. In fact, one of those ceramic filters, which is the most costly part of the system, that's probably going to be $30 or $40, that will last you a lifetime. By the way, some of them are impregnated with colloidal silver. That's great. The one I use is. It's from Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. So what's the colloidal silver for? Well, if you haven't used it a while, let's say you're out of the country for a couple of months like me, that'll make sure that the water that's been sitting in there all that time doesn't build up any bacteria. Because silver kills bacteria and viruses. You know, any water that's been sitting stagnant for weeks and months is going to get a growth of bacteria or algae or something. And you know, if you're careful and you don't drop that ceramic filter or bang it around, it can last a lifetime. You just clean the outer surface, as mentioned, every 6 months to a year when the water flow slows down and it gets loaded with gunk. Now, as far as the final carbon block filter, one way to find out if you should change that thing is if you've got chlorinated water, because when it's depleted, you'll start tasting and smelling the chlorine again. So the carbon black takes out chlorine. It also reduces fluoride and takes out all the organics like pesticides and those disgusting plastics we were just talking about. Though I have to tell you, in many cases, that final filter, that carbon block filter, which costs around 10 or 15 bucks, in my experience, those filters can last a year or so. Though after a year, I always change it just to be safe, even if it's still doing a good job taking out the chlorine. By the way, you'll find down here in Latin America, almost all the water supplies are heavily chlorinated. They overdo it because in the past, they used to underdo it so much that people would get sick. That's why when you turn on the faucet in almost any Latin American household or take a shower, man, the chlorine stench could be overpowering. And of course, I get a lot of questions about fluoride too. How to get that out of the system? Well, I'll tell you, there isn't a single Latin American city that fluoridates their water. So you don't have to worry about it, unless, of course, it's seeping in naturally, but I haven't come across that yet. And about heavy metals? Well, you know, that's a problem anywhere in the world if your water supply is being taken from a lake or a river that's downstream from heavy industry. It rarely shows up in well water, especially if your well's down 200 feet or so. My advice, if you're worried about it, have your water tested first. By the way, I put together a little report. It's called All About Water Filter, Heavy Metal, and Organic Chemical Removal. It's for people who think they might have heavy metal contamination in their system. So I'm not talking much about down here in Latin America. I haven't come across that yet, but I am ready for it when I do. So if you're wondering about heavy metal contamination and how to get it out of your water if you have it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll ship you off my info on how to do it. By the way, it's very simple to do it, too. You just add another canister to your water filter setup, and you fill it with a certain kind of medium. One's called KDF-55, and one's called KDF-85. It's a process media that takes out heavy metals of all kinds. It kind of looks like coffee grounds or granulated dirt. Again, you can buy that stuff right on Amazon. It's cheap. Though, personally, I've never had the need to use it myself. I've been to many Latin countries. I've used my water system for many years now. And believe me, it's infinitely better than buying bottled water. Oh, and you'll find out with my normal setup, three canisters, the final one being a carbon block filter, even without that special medium just mentioned, it'll also reduce fluoride and heavy metals too. Just know there's an easy, cheap solution. Though I do recommend if you're worried about it, have your water tested before you get into the heavy metal removing part. Because, you know, you can get carried away with these things. Sometimes people go well beyond the call of duty and get kind of obsessed about something that's not really an issue. Then, of course, some people say, then why don't I just buy one of those big old Berkey filters? You've heard of them. They come from England. They take out everything. But they're also $200 or $300, and you're stuck with that system and buying replacement parts from them, too, which aren't cheap. It's a nice system, all right, but I prefer to assemble my own because I know I can always go online with Amazon or whatever, or go down to a local pool store and get all the replacement parts and, most often, the filters, too. Oh, and one more thing, I do mention in my report the exact filters that I buy. And I usually buy them three at a time. Why not? Then you're good for a couple of years. And as far as the ceramic filters, I have two, one that's in the canister and a spare just in case that one breaks because they are fragile. Once you take them out and start cleaning them, you got to be real careful because they are, as advertised, pure ceramic. And for example, if you take it out and are cleaning it in a porcelain sink, when porcelain and ceramic battle each other, the porcelain always wins. And those filters are slippery when you take them out. I've dropped one before in a porcelain sink and the porcelain won. So I'm speaking from experience. Here's a tip. When you're cleaning that ceramic filter, when you unscrew the canister, have a plastic bucket half filled with water directly under it when you remove it. Then it won't get banged around. I had to learn the hard way when I took the canister apart over the porcelain sink. Oh, and by the way, before you put your canister back in, inspect the thing really well for hairline cracks. There's not a big chance you'll find one, but you never know because some people can over-tighten the canister. And when you over-tighten it, that compresses the ceramic filter in its housing, even though it's got a rubber gasket at the top and bottom. That does cushion it a bit. If you over-tighten it, you could produce hairline cracks. By the way, that's the only element or canister you have to be careful with. The other ones are very durable. Even if you've got butterfingers, they are slippery when wet, as mentioned. But they can take quite a few knocks and bumps. I repeat, order extra filters when you're first setting it up. I suggest three carbon blocks and three sediment filters and two ceramic filters. Like I said, with care, one ceramic filter will last a lifetime. But the world's not looking too good these days and supply chains are all screwed up, so it's best to have extras around. Oh, and here's a typical email on the water subject. It's from Mr. JL. He says, "Hola, Johnny. I'd love to see the pictures of your underwater purification setup, ideally along with names and brands and products used." Yep, I'll send that to you. Don't worry. Then he says, "I'm guessing you're not using a UV light system, ultraviolet. What's your take on it? Everyone who's using water purification in my neighborhood has installed these UV light systems. The problem is we have high concentrations of naturally occurring arsenic and fluoride in our area, and UV doesn't seem the right way for me, although these systems do include filters as well. Appreciate your take on it. Your avid longtime listener, Mr. JL. Okay, JL, as far as ultraviolet systems, you know, UV only kills bacteria and viruses, does nothing to remove chlorine, fluoride, or anything else. It just kills simple organisms. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. However, you have to maintain the thing, and you never really know if the UV light's killing it all. Meanwhile, as mentioned, a ceramic element, like the Dalton brand I use from Amazon, it's impregnated with colloidal silver, as mentioned. Some aren't, you know. That thing's rated at less than 1 micron. Oh, and by the way, on Amazon, you know, people are always writing in and giving their criticisms and opinions on the product, right? Well, it makes me laugh when I hear people say that those ceramic filters get clogged way too fast. That's what they're supposed to do. If they're clogging, that means they're getting the crap out of your water, you COVID idiot. Just remember, if you take care of them right, they'll last a lifetime. As for me, I end up cleaning my ceramic filter about every 6 months, and it only takes about 10 minutes. Hey, the time to get worried is if your filter never clogs, because then it would be letting all the gunk through now, wouldn't it? Anyway, as for JL saying he's got arsenic and fluoride in his water, well, then he'll just need an extra stage to his filter, as mentioned. All right, now let's talk about airports here in Latin America and what they're doing when you arrive. Well, the good news is that they're coming to their senses and they're realizing they can't keep these places shut down forever. For example, starting September 15th, the Dominican Republic, the DR, hoping to entice tourists back after the whole industry has been decimated. You know, that's their main source of foreign income, tourism. The good news is they're scrapping the requirement of a negative COVID-19 test when you arrive, which is what most foreign airports are requiring throughout the world. In other words, if you're traveling most anywhere, airport officials are requiring that you have a negative COVID-19 test that's been authenticated within 72 hours. Well, the DR has just scrapped that, though they'll spot check people who seem to be coughing, sniffling, and sneezing. Otherwise, they'll just let you in. And the DR is providing free travel assistance through January 2021. Mexico's airports are open too. Costa Rica's open theirs too. However, every traveler there must complete a digital epidemiological health pass form and have a negative COVID-19 test done within 72 hours, as mentioned, and they won't accept those rapid serological immunity tests. But remember, in a previous show I mentioned, if you're going to Costa Rica, you have to have travel insurance, and if they don't accept yours, you got to buy theirs. And for adults, you're looking at $500, kids $300, and senior citizens almost $1,000. So look out for that nasty trap. Oh, and by the way, Costa Rica will not let every tourist come in from the U.S. in. As of September 15th, they're only accepting people from 11 different states. Yep, in Costa Rica, the COVIDiots rule. Oh, and as for Guatemala, on September 18th, the airports are open, and you'll need that negative COVID-19 PCR test, too, done within 72 hours before arriving. But the rumors are flying that within a month or so, most all Latin American countries will be adopting the same policy as the Dominican Republic. Seems somehow there's a bureaucrat in the DR who actually has half a brain. Though it is wise these days to check that box and get trip insurance when you're buying your tickets online and checking out. And make some hard copies of that. Maybe even run it through Google Translate and print out a copy in Spanish too. I'm talking about if you're planning on arriving in any destination throughout the world. Be ready to flash that insurance policy stuff. So, the good news is that things are loosening up. That means by the time my Expat Insider Seminar launches in early January 2021, that's about 4 months from now, I'm certain this COVIDiot madness thing will have simmered down considerably. Oh, and about the seminar, just go to expatplanb.com, click on the seminar link for complete info and how to sign up for the early bird discounts. And here we are, about 4 months away from launch time, and the seminar's half full already. So if you're planning on coming down, getting your Plan B on steroids, make sure you sign up soon so you don't get left behind. And remember, there's a 3-payment plan with no interest. So to make it easier, you can spread the payments over the next 4 months. All right, now we have an email from Chip. He says, ¿Qué pasa, Señor Johnny? I first am writing to let you know I effing love your podcast. My wife and I just recently started the expat conversation within the past 6 months after visiting multiple Latin countries. I've downloaded as many podcasts as my app would allow. The only downside is my commutes are 50 minutes long each way and your show is only 28 minutes, so I'm always left wanting for more. I'm writing today to get more info on Captain Mango's Intro to Crypto course. And finally, I'd like to know how you invest in gold, silver, and Bitcoin. Our typical investment strategies are every month, we invest a little in our 401k and our IRA, and if lucky, a bit more. Do you just keep buying crypto and commodities on an automatic basis? Or dollar cost averaging? I personally have some gold and silver, but I'm not quite sure if I should keep investing or waiting until the elections are over and the media forgets about the corona and moves on. Of course, they'll find something new to move on to. I'm also very nervous about transporting gold and silver with me when we finally get the hell out of Dodge. Thanks for everything, Chip. And then I've got an email from James on pretty much the same thing. He says, Johnny, thanks for the great advice about purchasing gold coins. I finally bought some 1 ounce American gold legals, and I'm very excited about it. However, looking at the coins, I notice there's $50 written on each one, even though their market value is around $2,000 apiece. So I'm thinking I can carry 200 gold coins on an airplane without reporting the $10,000 limit. Am I correct about that? Can I buy a house with gold coins, or do I have to exchange gold coins for quetzales or the local funny money to buy a house in Guatemala? Do you recommend a certain type of wallet to carry gold coins if I walk through TSA with them? Oh, and you told us about a phone coin ping test where you could do a sound test for real gold coins. I did a search on my iPhone app store but couldn't find it. Is it only for Android? I know you talked about transporting gold through TSA in the past, but I can't find a way to access your podcast about those subjects because you don't write the complete theme of each podcast down. Plus, your podcasts before July 3rd, 2020 are not available on Apple Podcasts. Please do something for us so we can search topics on your podcast, Johnny. I especially need the one where you're talking about transporting gold coins through TSA. Thanks for everything, James. Whoa, lots of stuff there. But unfortunately, we're at the end of the podcast, so I'll be picking up with all that stuff on the next show, so stay tuned. South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.